Good morning, everybody.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is your instructor, Erica Evans, for Pharmacology and Dosage and Calculations. This day, we're going to go over chapters 14. And for dosage and calculations, we're going to do more dimensional analysis type problems. So I want you guys to become familiar with all the concepts of dimensional analysis, because it's really going to help improve your knowledge base and your skills when it comes to figuring out drug dosage calculations. It's also going to help you to practice safely. Now, Chapter 14 is talking about antidepressants, psychomotor stimulants, and lithium. Okay, so we've been talking about so far the effects of medication on the central nervous system. We've also been talking about the effects of medication on the peripheral nervous system. We've talked about action potentials. We've talked about neurotransmitters and synapses. We talked about different mechanisms of actions for different drugs. In this chapter, we're just going to focus on the medications that have to do with the neurotransmitters or chemicals in your brain, and how too much of them can cause problems and not enough of them can cause problems. And these medications kind of work as agonists and antagonists in order to help stabilize a person's mood. Okay. Mental depression is a common illness that affects most people at one time or another. During depression, there are changes in mood and behavior, along with feelings of frustration and hopelessness. Decreased appetite and difficulty in sleeping are also common signs of depression. Depressed individuals appear unable to cope with the demands or stresses of living. In severe depression, when a person feels there is no escape, he or she may come to think of suicide as an acceptable solution. Early recognition and treatment are essential for prevention of this serious consequence of depression. There are several different types of depression. Depression that is caused by external factors, such as death or unemployment, is referred to as exogenous, or reactive depression. Usually, there is a period of shock and depression, which is followed by a period of readjustment and a resolve that life must go on. In this sense, a reactive depression is self-limiting and usually does not require drug therapy. The love and understanding of family and friends support the individual through crises. The second major type of depression is referred to as endogenous depression. Remember, from a few chapters back, we have exogenous medications and endogenous medications. So the second type of major depression is referred to as endogenous depression. Endogenous depression is frequently more serious and usually requires both psychotherapy and drug treatment. This type of depression originates from within the individual and may not be associated with easily recognized causes. Psychological disturbances and maladjustment disorders or biochemical defects in the brain are thought to be involved. Episodes of endogenous depression may occur at intervals through one's lifetime. In some cases of depression, there are alternate periods of hyperexcitability and elation known as mania. Individuals who experience these alternating cycles of depression and mania are classified as manic depressive. Another term for this condition is bipolar mood disorder. Drugs used to treat depression. An important advance in understanding depression occurred with the discovery that the levels of norepinephrine and serotonin in the brain can influence the mental behavior. Low levels of norepinephrine and or serotonin are associated with mental depression, while high levels of norepinephrine and or serotonin may be involved in mania. This concept involving norepinephrine and serotonin, referred to chemically as monoamines, is known as the monoamine theory of mental depression. Drugs that can increase the level of norepinephrine and serotonin in the brain are useful in the treatment of mental depression. They are referred to as antidepressants or mood elevators. The major antidepressant drug classes include the monoamine oxidase inhibitors, the tricyclic antidepressants, and the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. The psychomotor stimulants are generally amphetamines or amphetamine-like drugs that produce a generalized CNS stimulation, usually increased wakefulness and alertness. These drugs are not true antidepressants and have limited therapeutic causes. Lithium is referred to as a mood stabilizer and is used to treat individuals who experience wide shifts of mood, mania, or alternating cycles of depression and mania, or bipolar mood disorder. So now we're going to talk about the different types of antidepressants. First, we have monoamine oxidase inhibitors. Monoamine oxidase inhibitors, they are enzymes found in most body cells, but particularly in the adrenergic nerve endings. The normal function of MAOs is to break down norepinephrine and serotonin into metabolites that are then excreted by the kidneys. MAOs prevent the buildup of excessive levels of norepinephrine and serotonin in the brain and other body tissue. In mental depression, there appears to be an abnormal decrease in the level of, in the levels of brain norepinephrine and serotonin. Drugs that inhibit or block MAOs are called appropriately MAO inhibitors. By inhibiting MAOs, these drugs decrease the amounts of norepinephrine and serotonin that are destroyed. Consequently, MAOs inhibitors permit the levels of norepinephrine and serotonin in the brain to increase. This increase is usually accompanied by clinical improvement of the depression. The MAO inhibitors require 2 to 4 weeks to produce their maximum effect. After a week or so of treatment, there is usually an improvement in appetite and sleep, followed by an elevation of mood and overall improvement in mental state. These effects continue approximately 2 weeks after termination of treatment. The MAO inhibitors are involved in many drug interactions. Caution must be exercised if other drugs, especially other antidepressants, are administered during administration of an MAO inhibitor. And while MAO inhibitors remain in the system, serious drug interactions can occur. There are some dietary restrictions that go along with the MAOs and some adverse effects. I want you guys to become familiar with that. Let's move on to the tricyclic antidepressants. Tricyclic antidepressant drugs are so named because of the characteristic triple ring structure that they possess. Recently, some new antidepressants, which produce pharmacological effects similar to those of tricyclics, have been introduced with two rings, bicyclics, four wings, tetracyclics, and other with quite different chemical structures, non-tricyclics. The chemistry of these antidepressants is beyond the scope of this book. However, a simple method of classification involves the chemical substitutions, usually methyl groups, on the nitrogen molecule, which is present in all drugs. Most of the drugs can then be classified as being either secondary amines or tertiary amines. Another interesting generalization is that secondary amines mainly increase brain levels of norepinephrine more than serotonin, while the tertiary amines mainly increase brain levels of serotonin more than norepinephrine. The key to effective therapy is to identify which neurotransmitter should be increased in the patient. However, this step is not always easy. Frequently, several drugs must be tried with each patient before the most effective drug is found. The mechanism of action of tricyclics and related antidepressant drugs is to block the reuptake of norepinephrine and serotonin back into the neural nerve endings. As a result, there's an accumulation of these neurotransmitters in the synaptic clefts. This action restores the level of neuronal activity of norepinephrine and serotonin back to normal and alleviates the symptoms of dysfunction and depression. The pharmacological actions occur within a few hours of administration. However, the full antidepressant effect requires 2 to 4 weeks to develop. Consequently, it is believed that tricyclic and related antidepressant drugs produce a long-term effect that is not yet completely understood. A suggestion is that these drugs may change the sensitivity of adrenergic norepinephrine and serotonergic serotonin receptor sites, leading to an increase in the activity of these neurotransmitters, which is the desired neurotransmitter effect that relieves depression. In addition to the antidepressant effect, the tricyclics and related drugs produce varying degrees of sedation, anticholinergic effects, and alpha-adrenergic blockade. The degree of sedation among these various drugs is compared. If you look up in tables 14.2 and tables 14.3, you're going to see tricyclic and related antidepressants, and you're going to see the amount of sedation that they produce and the usual daily dosage. And then you're going to look over in table 14.3, when you're using an antidepressant in along with, you know, say if you drink alcohol or amphetamines or other anticholinergic or antihistamines, there may be some increased sedation, increased CNS stimulation, constipation, urinary retention, blurred vision, and possibility of seizures. So drug-to-drug interactions are something that you really do want to consider and watch out for in these patients. So you have to always do something that is called medication reconciliation. Medication reconciliation basically involves interviewing the patient and getting a detailed list and history of medications that they're currently taking, have taken in the past, including over-the-counter medications or herbals. So it's very important that you get a complete list of those medications to make sure there are no drug-to-drug interactions. Pharmacies have a very good system on med reconciliation because the digital system can cross-match all the medications that you take and make sure that one doesn't, cause an increased effect of the other or vice versa. I'm going to play a short video for you regarding how antidepressants work and their mechanism of action. Just one moment while I'll get this together.
Each brain cell can have as many as 25,000 connections with other cells. Messages, which direct many functions throughout your body, travel through your brain from cell to cell through these connections. For these signals to move from a sending cell to a receiving cell, they must cross a small gap called the synapse. Chemicals called neurotransmitters, located at the ends of the sending cells, help the signal cross this gap. Serotonin is one such neurotransmitter, a very important one that helps regulate mood, emotions, and other body functions. After the serotonin has done its job, it's reabsorbed by the sending cell and is soon back in position to help with the next nerve signal. If you have depression, you may have a serotonin imbalance. Your overall level of serotonin may be low, and some of it may be reabsorbed too soon. As a result, communication between the brain cells is impaired. An SSRI, or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, is a medication designed to help increase the amount of serotonin in the synapse by blocking its reabsorption. As serotonin builds up, normal communication between cells can resume, and your symptoms of depression may improve.
So we talked about the mechanisms of actions and how antidepressants work. So it's all about a balance or homeostasis in the body. The different drugs can either inhibit serotonin and norepinephrine reuptake or in order to increase the levels in the synapses so brain cells can communicate normally, relieving the depression. So like the book said, there are sometimes they have to figure out which neurotransmitter that needs to be increased. Is it the norepinephrine or is it the serotonin? And sometimes the only way to do that is by trial and error. So you'll sometimes find that, you know, doctors may have an individual try different drugs to see, and then there's lots of follow-up in between to see which one has the greatest effect. And that's sometimes how they
just by the medication, they'll say, oh, well, this one was most effective, so the person must have had a deficiency in norepinephrine. Or this one was more effective, so the person must have had a deficiency in serotonin. So sometimes they don't know which neurotransmitter needs to be increased until that particular medication that increases that particular neurotransmitter works. Let's go now over to, we're going to talk about patient administration and monitoring because it's very important for these drugs. It's very important, like I said, to do the med reconciliation because you do not want them taking something that, like, for instance, some SSRIs, they mess with anticoagulants. So if a person is on a blood thinner or taking aspirin or something like that every day, it might not work as effectively if they're taking an antidepressant drug such as Prozac because that interferes with anticoagulation medications. Let's talk real quick about patient administration and monitoring. MAO inhibitors, you always want to make sure that you provide the patient with a list of tyramine containing foods and over-the-counter drugs that may be avoided while taking MAO inhibitors. Explain to the patient the common side effects, dizziness, low blood pressure, and dry mouth, constipation, and other GI disturbances such as blurred vision and impotency in males. Instruct the patient to report excessive dizziness or feelings of faintness, difficulty with urination, CNS stimulation or agitation, or yellowing of the skin such as jaundice. With the tricyclic antidepressants, you want to monitor the vital signs of the person. When drugs are administered parenterally or with particular attention to blood pressure and heart rate, you want to explain to the patient the common side effects due to the anticholinergic and alpha-blocking and antihistamine reactions. So this can cause low blood pressure, drowsiness, dry mouth, and constipation. You always want to instruct the patient to report increased pulse rate, excessive difficulties with urination or defecation, or excessive CNS stimulation such as tremors, restlessness, and seizures. Remember that the tricyclic antidepressants may be contraindicated in patients with glaucoma and prostatic hypertrophy, and that the elderly are more sensitive to anticholinergic drugs than the average person. Instruct the patient not to take other drugs unless it is checked with their physician or pharmacist. So once again, that's that medication reconciliation, making sure that the provider knows all the over-the-counter medicines the patient is taking, as far as herbals, pain relievers, and all prescription drugs. They all have to be reconciled when considering putting a person on antidepressants. And medication reconciliation should be done anyway, no matter what medicine you're putting them on. You always want to know everything that the patient is taking to make sure that they're all compatible. With the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, you always want to explain to the patient the common side effects of headache, nervousness, insomnia, nausea, loss of appetite, and diarrhea. Instruct the patient to report any excessive GI and CNS stimulation, such as agitation and seizures. The code word for today is going to be administration. Again, code word or flag word for today is going to be administration. I want to go ahead and talk real quickly about some dimensional analysis subjects because there are some, as far as your medication calculations. And I want to also make sure you guys know, I just want you to do page 151 for the chapter review. Just do page 151, chapter review, and that is over chapter 14. So just do page 151, the whole page, and send it to me in the email. Remember, the flag word for today was administration. Now I'm going to do play a short video for you regarding dosage calculations. And in this video, I'm going to send the link to you, of course, so you guys can be practicing these different kind of problems. I'm also going to send probably three videos over the dimensional analysis. One thing that I want you guys to get out of practicing these problems is that there's going to be different word problems that you're going to encounter or different kind of scenarios that you're going to encounter. Sometimes you're going to have to, in some hospitals, you have to actually mix the medications yourself. So it's very important that you know how to read the drug labels and you're able to figure out what it is that you're trying to find as far as, like, am I trying to find how many mLs I'm supposed to give? Am I trying to find out how many milligrams I'm supposed to give? And it's very important that you know how to set up the problem appropriately. So you're going to have a really good understanding of equations and ratios and proportions in order to do some of these drug calculations. So let me go ahead and do this problem. We're going to do this video on oral medication dosages, calculations, and dimensional analysis.
Solving oral medication drug problems using dimensional analysis. Before we start, you'll want to go to our website, registernursern.com, and download the worksheet that matches this video so you can follow along and solve the problems as I solve them. And to get the worksheet...
These worksheets are really good. They're going to give you extra problems. So remember that website, registernursern.com. Download the worksheets, and you can follow along on the video, and you can practice the problems. That's what I want you guys to do. There's a lot of conversion table worksheets on that video also, so you can simply work on your conversions of milligrams to pounds to kilograms, milligrams to grams, ounces to mLs, et cetera.
You will go to registernursern.com/worksheet, and it will be called Oral Medication Dosage Calculations Worksheet. So just click that, it will pop up in a PDF, and you can easily print it. Also, you'll want to get the metric table to help you along with solving these problems so you'll know where we're getting each measurement. You can get the metric table at registernursern.com/metric table. So let's get started.
Problem number one, MD orders lactose 5 grams by mouth twice a day. The pharmacy dispenses you with 40 grams per 30 mLs. How many milliliters will you get per dose?
Problem number one, in this problem, it asks us, the doctor has ordered lactose 5 grams by mouth twice a day, and the pharmacy gives us, in a little container, 40 grams equals 30 milliliters. So for every 30 milliliters, there's 40 grams, and the doctor only orders 5 grams. So we need to know how many milliliters we're going to administer per dose. So to do that, we're going to use dimensional analysis to solve. So just like with any dimensional analysis problem, you're going to set up with what the doctor orders. If you're not familiar with working dimensional analysis problems and need to brush up your skills, we have a video called Dimensional Analysis, and I walk you through how to solve a problem using dimensional analysis. So check that out if you're not really familiar with it. So let's get started. First, the doctor has ordered 5 grams, so we're going to start that out with our problem. We're going to say 5 grams. We're going to put 5 grams on top, and we want to know how many milliliters per dose. We're trying to get to milliliters. So in diagonal, in dimensional analysis, you work diagonally. So we're going to move grams to the bottom. And if you look at your worksheet, it says that what we're dispensed with is 40 grams equals 30 milliliters. So there's 40 grams. Grams cancels out, and there's 30 milliliters in the container. So that's where we got those values from the problem. Now, we've already got to milliliters, so what we're going to do is multiply everything at the top, everything at the bottom, and then divide. So 30 times 5 is 150. The only thing at the bottom is 40. Then you'll divide 150 divided by 40. That equals 3.75 milliliters. So you're going to be giving 3.75 milliliters per dose out of what the pharmacy gave you to equal the doctor's order of 5 grams. So that's how you solve that problem. Let's move to problem two.
Problem number two, MD orders Knoxville oral suspension 25,000 micrograms by mouth daily. The pharmacy dispenses you with 100 milligrams per ml. How many mLs will you administer per dose?
Problem two, we are given the problem, and we see that the doctor has ordered Noxifil, and he has ordered 25,000 micrograms by mouth once a day. We are given our medication, and we are dispensed with a container that has 100 milligrams per milliliter. So we need to know how out of that container can we give 25,000 micrograms. And the problem is asking per dose. So what we're going to do is just by looking at this problem, we know that this is probably going to be a multiple-step problem because our vial, our little canister, says a milligram, 100 milligrams, and the doctor ordered micrograms. So we know that we're probably going to have to use our metric table and convert milligrams from micrograms. So let's get started with this problem. Of course, the very first thing we do with dimensional analysis is that we start out with what the doctor ordered. They ordered 25,000 micrograms. So 25,000 micrograms goes up at the top, and we are trying to get to milliliters per dose. So with dimensional analysis, we work diagonally. We're going to move our micrograms down to the bottom. And here, this is where we're going to come to the metric table, because in our problem, you notice that it says 100 milligrams per milliliter. So we have to convert this 25,000 micrograms to milligrams. So in order to do that, you have to use your metric table and either refer to it or it's from your memory. And we know from the metric table there's 1,000 micrograms in 1 milligram. So 1,000 micrograms equals 1 milligram. And we've canceled out micrograms, so I marked that out. Now we're in milligrams. And we're trying to get to milliliters. So our what we're dispensed with is only in milligrams, so we can go ahead and use that. We're working diagonally. We're moving milligrams down, and from our problem, it says 100 milligrams equals 1 milliliter. So we're going to say 100 milligrams equals 1 milliliter, and milligrams cancels out, and we've been trying to get to milliliters. So we're done, and we can solve. We're going to multiply everything at the top, multiply everything at the bottom, and then divide. 25,000 times 1 is 25,000. 1,000 times 100 is 100,000. 25,000 divided by 100,000 equals 0.25. So we will be giving 0.25 milliliters per dose out of what the pharmacy dispensed us to give what the doctor ordered, 25 micrograms. So that is how you solve that problem. Let's move to problem three.
Problem number three. MD orders ibuprofen 6 milligrams per kilogram by mouth every 4 hours as the doctor pays for a child. The child weighs 64 pounds. The pharmacy dispenses you with 50 milligrams per 2 mLs. How many mLs will you administer per dose?
As you can see, she does a really good job explaining how dimensional analysis works. For your homework, again, you're going to do chapters 14, the chapter review, do the whole page and send it to me in email. I'm getting ready to send you guys the links to the videos today. I'll put the homework assignment in there again. Have a great day.
Doctor orders 6 milligrams per kilogram by mouth every 4 hours of ibuprofen as needed for pain for a child. The child weighs 64 pounds. The pharmacy gives us a little container of medicine of ibuprofen for every 2 milliliters is 50 milligrams. So how many milliliters are we going to give per dose? By looking at this problem, you see that the ibuprofen is per kilogram. So every kilogram, you're going to be giving 6 milligrams. So the child weighs 64 pounds. So we're going to have to convert that to kilograms to see how many milligrams we would give based on the child's weight. Anytime we have a weight-based problem based on a drug, you will see that a lot with your pediatric patients. You'll also see that in the hospital with heparin, drugs like that that are weight-based. You're going to know that this is a multiple-step problem. And I always like to begin with solving with the patient's weight first rather than what the doctor ordered. So what we're given, the doctor ordered 6 milligrams per kilogram, and we are trying to figure out how many milliliters per dose. And we're just going to write how much the child weighs. And the child weighs 64 pounds. Okay, so anytime with a weight-based problem, like I just said, let's start out with that in our dimensional analysis problem. So we're going to say the child weighs 64 pounds. And I like to just put one under that, and it's just in parentheses as a child. This helps keep everything balanced. And with that dimensional analysis, you work diagonally, so you're going to move pounds down. And this is where you refer to your metric table, because we're trying to convert 64 pounds to kilograms. And if you go and look, you see that there's 2.2 pounds in 1 kilogram. So 2.2 pounds in 1 kilogram, because we're trying to get to kilograms, because that's how the doctor has ordered the medication. Pounds cancels out. Now we're going to move kilograms down. And we have converted, so we can use the information that's in our problem. And there's 1 kilogram, 6 milligrams. So you're going to put 1 kilogram and 6 milligrams, because that's what the doctor's ordered. Normally we would start out with that, but since this is a weight base, we start out with the weight base. You can do it either way you want, but that's how I do it. Kilograms cancels out. We're going to move milligrams down. And from our problem, pharmacy dispensed stuff with a canister that has 50 milligrams in it per 2 mLs. So 50 milligrams equals 2 milliliters. And we were trying to solve for milliliters, so we're done. Our milligrams canceled out. So we are going to multiply everything at the top, everything at the bottom, divide, and then we will get our answer. So 64 pounds times 1 times 6 times 2 is 768. 2.2 times 1 times 50 is 110. 768 divided by 110 equals 6.9818, and it keeps repeating. And we are going to round to the nearest whole number. So it's 7. So we're going to give 7 milliliters per dose out of the canister that the pharmacy has dispensed us with to equal 6 milligrams per kilogram, and the patient's weight was 64 pounds. So that is how you solve that problem. Now let's move to problem 4.
Problem number 4. MD orders GI cocktail 250 milligrams by mouth every 4 hours for 1 day. The pharmacy dispenses you with 100 milligrams per 2 mLs. How many milliliters will you administer daily?
For problem 4, the doctor has ordered a GI cocktail 250 milligrams by mouth every 4 hours for 1 day. The pharmacy gives you a vial that has 10 milligrams per 2 mLs. And the problem asks, how many mLs are you going to give per day? This is not a per-dose question. You have to really pay attention to the wording of many questions, because on the NCLEX, on your entrance and exit exams, they might ask this. So always pay attention to what the problem's asking. So for this, we're going to set up a problem a little bit differently, and you're going to know that it's multi-step problem, just like our last problem we done. So with that, instead of, you know how in the last problem I started out with the weight, in this problem I'm going to start out with the dose instead of the doctor's order. So how we're going to set up a problem, first we need to ask ourselves, how many doses are we giving in 1 day? Since it's every 4 hours and there's 24 hours in a day, we know that we're going to be giving 6 doses since it's every 4 hours. So we're going to say 6 doses equals 1 day. Now with dimensional analysis, you work diagonally, so we're going to move dose down. And you're going to ask yourself, how many does one dose equal? So one dose, according to the problem, equals 250 milligrams because every 4 hours the patient is getting 250 milligrams, so that would equal one dose. Dose cancels out, and milligrams moves down diagonally, and you're going to look at the problem, and you're going to see what you're dispensed with. Pharmacy has gave you 100 milligrams per 2 mLs, so 100 milligrams equals 2 milliliters, and we're trying to get to milliliters per day. Everything is canceled out except for milliliters and day. So we're going to solve. We're going to multiply 6 times 250 times 2 equals 3,000. And everything on the bottom, which is just 100, so it would be 100. 3,000 divided by 100 equals 30. So you are going to be giving 30 milliliters per day. If it was a dose question, you would set it up a little bit differently. You wouldn't have this step. You would just do this step right there, and that would give you how many milliliters you would give per day. But because it's asking for per day, we had to add in that extra step. So let's move to our last problem, number 5.
Problem number 5. MD orders Cipro oral suspension 500 milligrams by mouth every 12 hours. The pharmacy dispenses you with 10 grams per 50 mLs. How many teaspoons will you administer per dose?
For the last problem, we are ordered, the doctor's ordered Cipro, an oral suspension, 500 milligrams every 12 hours. The pharmacy gives you 10 grams per 50 milliliters. So in 50 milliliters, there's 10 grams. And the doctor has ordered 500 milligrams. So right off the bat, you should know that this is going to be a multi-step problem because we're going to have to convert from milligrams to grams. And the problem wants to know how many teaspoons. So there's going to be even an extra step because the problem, we're dispensing in milliliters. So we're going to have to convert milliliters to teaspoons. So this is going to be about a five-step problem. So let's start out with what the doctor ordered. They order 500 milligrams. Okay. And we are dispensed with a canister that's in grams. So we have to convert this 500 to grams. So this is where the metric table comes in. We know that there is 1,000 milligrams in 1 gram. 1,000 milligrams equals 1 gram. Milligrams cancels out. We move grams down because we work diagonally. And in the problem, because we've already converted to grams, we see that 10 grams equals 50 milliliters. So 10 grams equals 50 milliliters. Normally we've thought because the problem is asked for milliliters, but this problem asks for teaspoons, so we've got to get to teaspoons. Grams are canceled out. So you're going to ask yourself, how many milliliters are in a teaspoon? How do we get there? Well, we know that there's 15 milliliters in 1 tablespoon. So 15 milliliters equals 1 tablespoon. We're in tablespoons, but we still got to get to teaspoons. So move tablespoons down. And we're asking ourselves, how many tablespoons are in a teaspoon? And there is 1 tablespoon in 3 teaspoons. Now we are in teaspoons. And the problem asks us for teaspoons per dose. So we're done. We can solve. You're going to multiply everything at the top. 500 times 50 times 1 times 3 is 75,000. Everything on the bottom you're going to multiply. 1,000 times 10 times 15 times 1 is 150,000. 75,000 divided by 150,000 equals 0.5 teaspoons per dose. So you're going to give a half a teaspoon to equal the 500 milligrams that the doctor ordered. Okay, that's some dimensional analysis on how to solve oral problems. Go to our website, registernursern.com, and click the slider that says quizzes and test your knowledge to see how well you've done after watching this video. We have a quiz that will test you specifically on oral dosage calculations. Thank you.
So I hope you guys wrote that information down. I would like for you to visit that website and do some of those quizzes and problems to just help reinforce learning, and also practice makes perfect. So please do that. It's for your benefit. Have a great day.